Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Welcome to another episode of Bucking Around. I'm Cody Coleman, and joining me today is the Pirates community, their very own streamer. Like, he's just taken over Pirates baseball streaming with MLB The Show. It's Bucko Nutsy, Nutsy Poo, or just Nutsy, however you want to say his name. It's Nutsy. Nutsy, welcome to the show.
Appreciate you having me, man. I was happy to come on. I'm excited with what you guys are doing and excited about Pirates baseball, honestly. So this is kind of the perfect combination for me.
Absolutely, man. So, like, let's just get down to it. Like, where's that connection? You to Pittsburgh. I mean, I know you live in Montana. Like, you're so far away. How does that connection to Pittsburgh and specifically the Pirates come about?
Yeah, so realistically, me sitting in Montana, right, like there's not really a regional team for me. Like the Mariners are kind of over there. The Rockies are kind of over there. They're close enough, but they're not like home for me necessarily. So you would think, like, why would I ever pick a poverty franchise to become a fan of? And really what it boils down to is my stepdad originally grew up in Pittsburgh. He's from Dormont. He came into my life really, really young. So like 3 years old, he's been in my life ever since. And obviously being from Pittsburgh, he was always ingrained in the Pittsburgh culture and Pittsburgh sports. And he kind of passed that along to me. So obviously I started as a big Pittsburgh Steelers fan. The Steelers are always my first love. Like, football is my first love. And I got back into gaming, you know, really, really young. I used to play All-Star Baseball. I used to play the old MLB The Shows, EA MVP. And you know, obviously I was a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, I always gravitated to the Pirates on video games as well. And I always used to kill it with Jason Bay back in the day and his run with the Pittsburgh Pirates. And obviously my connections with Pittsburgh, my stepdad being from Pittsburgh and me having spent a handful of trips to Pittsburgh over the years, it kind of was just like a perfect match for me. And I've really dove into kind of pirate culture and the pirate community over the last handful of years. And man, it's awesome. Awesome fan base, really awesome people around. The best thing I can say about the pirate fan base or the pirate community is because it's been a struggle for so long in our fan base, all we have are super passionate, super fun people. We don't see a lot of the bandwagoning that you see in other big fan bases. Yeah. Which, I mean, it basically does become a family after a certain extent. We run into the same people on Twitter. We run into the same people at the games, like whatever it might be. It's just been really cool.
Yeah. And I mean, talking about you just being ingrained in the fan base, I mean, you're wearing an Altoona Curve hat right now. You don't see too many people rocking the Curve hat.
No. And one of my favorite things, like the thing that I collect and the thing a lot of people know me for collecting, is minor league baseball hats. And you have to know that I have virtually every single Pirate minor league affiliate baseball hat. Awesome. So what perfect than rocking the Curve tonight,
man? I got to get on your level. Cause I, like, last year on the Instagram, we were like, okay, how can we post more on Instagram? So I started like digging deep into the minor league. What do you call them? Not the lineups, the box scores. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to find, okay, who had a big game here, there, wherever. Ended up downloading the minor league baseball app. Like, and every day I'm just fishing through box scores. Like, okay, who had a good game? So like, I was following hardcore Bradenton Marauders.
Yeah.
Greensboro Grasshoppers.
That's like, awesome.
I was following them hardcore because I'm like, I need more content for Instagram.
Yeah. And to be completely honest with you, like the Pirates are the perfect squad to really get into minor league baseball for because we're always kind of looking forward to the future. And like, we always seem like we have a good depth of prospects coming up. It always makes sense to be like following those minor league teams. So you can watch a Tamar Johnson or a Paul Skeens and like watch their come up through the minor leagues and see what you're going to get at the major league level. So like the love of minor league baseball and the love of the Pirates really does go hand in hand. I actually will show off. Like... I just got a new hat in today, like right before we jumped on. It's a Worcester WooSox hat.
Yeah. And
Loki, I just saw there's this Twitter account called MILB Promos that just tweets out anytime like any minor league baseball team goes on sale or anything like that. And they had the new era hats from last year on sale for $7 a pop. So I was like,
whoa,
easy diving on that. Yeah.
Well, what's funny is, so I live in New Jersey and the Yankees AA affiliate, the Somerset Patriots, they just announced that they're doing an alter ego this year of being like the New Jersey Diners or something like that. And I saw it. I'm like, I got to get to one of those games. I got to buy the merch. I got to do it. I'm like, that's what is so much fun about minor league baseball is you have these alter egos of these teams. It's fun baseball. Like, obviously, you got guys trying to come through the ranks and make it to the show, but they're putting on a show themselves with all this fun stuff in the minors.
Yeah, that's facts. I actually, it's funny that you mentioned that. Someone pointed out the Diners alter ego to me just a couple of weeks ago, and I literally bought a hat so fast. And I've been waiting for it to come in since then, and I'm very much looking forward to getting that one in.
Yeah, I'm trying to catch a game. I don't know if they're going to be doing the Diners alternate ego or whatever when they're playing the Curve. Mm-hmm. But I do. I'm trying to go to a Curve game down there, so that'd be fun to see.
That's a good.
Yeah, the minor league baseball stuff is just like I used to not really care. Like growing up, you know, the big minor league guy was Andrew McCutchen, mm-hmm. and then he comes up in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, okay, I don't really got to care about the minor leagues anymore. Our guy's here. But now, you know, as you grow older as a Pirates fan, you're like, oh, who do we got? We got to bring somebody up here to save us. Totally. So it's like you said, it's fun to see these guys take the journey.
Yeah, and especially last year, because like obviously there was a whole lot of backlash towards the front office for how they handled Endy and Henry. Mm-hmm. So it like checking in every day to see Endy just killing it in AAA or seeing Henry hit the cover of the baseball in single A and double A. And you're like, it actively gets you excited for what you know is coming for your favorite team.
Right. Right. And like even spring training, because like this year, all the top prospects mm-hmm. are with the major league team. Mm-hmm. I know some of them have, I think like Bubba Chandler, Anthony Solometto, mm-hmm. they told them, okay, you guys are going to go to minor league camp now. But like to start spring training, you see these guys playing alongside the major league guys, and you're like, this could be the squad in just a couple years, just a couple months even.
Yeah, and especially when you see guys that look like, oh, wait, they might have the juice like Skeens or Tamar. Holy God.
Even Jared Jones.
Yeah.
Jared Jones throwing over 100 miles per hour. It's like, I didn't know you had that. I was not familiar with your game, sir.
Yeah, it's I feel a lot better than I did going into the spring about our pitching rotation. Obviously, I mean, maybe Jared breaks camp, right? Like you could conceivably see an opportunity for that to occur. Obviously, Skeens got the news that he's starting the year in the minors today. But like, you know, if we can survive the first couple of months, all of a sudden, maybe it doesn't look so terrible when May and June rolls around.
And then you have a guy like Rowanzi. I know we're talking like this is supposed to be an evergreen podcast. I don't care. Like baseball's back and I want to talk about it. Okay. Yeah. But Rowanzi, he surprised us mm-hmm. with his first start against Toronto. He was throwing hard. Mm-hmm. We were expecting to see like, okay, 92, 93. He was up there like 95, 96. So we're like, wow, he's trying to prove something right out the gate.
Yeah. And even Quinn hitting like 94, 95 on his sinkers and fastballs, like that's all so promising. It's all so promising.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun team to watch. But I want to go back to your somewhat Pittsburgh roots here with your stepdad. You said you've been to Pittsburgh quite a handful of times. Mm-hmm. We were talking about how Pittsburgh really isn't a food city. So I'm curious, as someone who isn't from the area that travels in, where do you like to go eat when you come to Pittsburgh?
I mean, I hit the, like, the staples, right? So, right. Like, you got to hit Primanti's every time you right. come in. That's a guaranteed. There's this place down in the strip that has these egg rolls that we always eat every single time okay. we go down there. And that slaps, man. Those things slap. But the one that my stepdad loved growing up, and he has passed the love on to me, like, I absolutely jones for it every time I'm in Pittsburgh, Fiore's. So, like, I hit pizza, yeah. gotta hit Fiore's pizza, and that's not just a one-time stop in Pittsburgh. That's like a two or three-time stop for me anytime I'm in Pittsburgh. So those are really the three that we will hit real regularly. But you're not wrong. Like, there isn't a great yeah. food culture in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Western PA just isn't, like, it's the Rust Belt, man. Yeah. We're known for steel and steel only. Like, mm-hmm. you're going to come here and get a pile of slop on your plate.
Yeah, that's fair. And you guys have, like, a bunch of, like, it seems like really off-the-wall concoctions. It seems like, I mean, Pittsburgh yeah. being, like, the industrial town it was, there's a really big melting pot of, like, European cultures. So they, like, came together and they've thrown these, like, weird combos together of things. And
right, like, you're getting jalapenos in your pierogies.
Yeah, exactly. Like... Damn, speaking of pierogies, that does sound pretty good as well. Dude, damn.
now that I don't live in Western PA anymore, I have had less and less pierogies. And I just jones for them, man. Mm-hmm. Like, I'll see them at the store and I'm like, ooh, those look good. And then I'm like, I already have everything I need. I don't need to buy pierogies.
I mean, but you do.
But you do.
Yeah.
And they're Mrs. T's. But the thing is, out here in Jersey, they only have, like, the original Mrs. T's. Like, mm-hmm. you can't get the cheddar ones. You can't get the jalapeno ones. You can't get the bacon ones. I don't know why, but you just can't get them here.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I will say that one of the other reason that I don't always end up eating a whole lot whenever I come back to Pittsburgh, and hopefully I get to make a trip out next fall. Another person in the pirate community is getting married. I'm going to be headed out there for his wedding. But I always end up eating in the arenas. So, like, whenever I'm out, because I'm only out for, like, you know, 3-4 days at a time, like, I'm hitting a couple of Pirates game, or I'm hitting a Steelers game and a Pens game. So, like, I end up just kind of eating my way through the arenas and then not getting to enjoy, like, the rest of the city necessarily.
Right. Now you bring up the arenas. Let's talk about the food inside PNC Park. They have some off-the-wall stuff in there, too. I don't know if you've ever tried any of the stuff there. Like, that's crazy.
No, I haven't. And I've just started getting, like, I have a goal of hitting every MLB park at some point in my life. And, like, I'm just starting to get into the really freaky things, like, trying to go to every park and hit their big ticket items. Like, went to Dodger Stadium, got the Dodger dog, went to Angel Stadium. They have, like, this iconic helmet nachos that just absolutely slap. And it's just a massive plastic batting helmet of nachos. Seattle, which is where I end up seeing my most baseball games because it's close to me, do crickets, and they're fried crickets, low-key kind of slap, and they have, like, Iver's clam chowder and that kind of stuff. But the times I've went to PNC, it's been a while since I've been out to PNC. I couldn't even drink the last time that I was out in PNC. I would stick to the staples. Like, I'd go sausages, the fries, the chicken tendies, that kind of stuff.
And maybe a Permani sandwich.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But no, so they have this thing. I think it comes in, like, a waffle cone, and it's pulled pork, like barbecue pulled pork. And then I think it's cheddar pierogies just stuffed in this waffle cone. And I absolutely adore it. It is the best.
Dude, I will demolish that thing. I will.
It'll fill you up.
Yeah, next time I get out to Pittsburgh, which, like I said, it's hard for me to get out there now, but, like, the next time I get out to Pittsburgh and get out to PNC, that's going to have to be on the list. That sounds absolutely bomb.
Right. And I know, hey, we're talking about all this phenomenal, fatty, terrible food. But you, sir, you've gone on a little bit of a weight loss journey here this past year. I've noticed from afar. You know, you've been talking about it every once in a while. Mm-hmm. What was that journey like, and what did something click, or was it just like, oh wow, I'm losing weight?
This ironically has a really big pirate connection for me as well. So back in May, the Pirates played the Mariners in Seattle, and we headed out. It was I can't remember. I think that's technically Memorial Day weekend, right? Memorial Day is okay. The one in May, Labor Day is the one in September. Yes. I always mix those up, but it was during Memorial Day weekend. So we went out for the 3-day weekend, and the Pirates were in town, and we hit a bunch of games. And then immediately upon looking back on that trip, I looked at my pictures and I was like, I basically didn't recognize myself. Like, people who know me and know my background, I'm a lawyer day to day. That's what I do for my profession. And I knew throughout law school and throughout the practice of law, I had started gaining weight, and like, you could always feel it. Like every time I put on my suit, it'd be a little bit tighter. It wouldn't fit as well. Right. And then I looked back at my pictures after that pirate trip in May, and I was not happy with where I was at. So I really, really dove in starting in June, and, really just went hard on like a super low carb, very strict diet. And I've been on it with just a handful of exceptions since June. And as we sit here today, I'm 80 pounds down. The goal would be to get another 25 or so, which would put me under 200. And that would be a nice place for me to kind of stop and chill. The other big thing is like what kept me dedicated to that is I found out my wife was pregnant in August, and I didn't want to be unhealthy for my child, right? Like, I want to be able to enjoy my child growing up and be able to go play with her and like really enjoy all of the benefits of fatherhood and all of the awesomeness that it brings. And I wasn't to the point where I was like immobile, but my weight definitely limited my physical abilities, and I just didn't want that to be the case anymore.
Yeah, I feel that, man. And like, you know, with a journey like that, there's obviously like obstacles. What were some of your biggest obstacles on that journey?
So, I mean, obviously the cravings, right? Because when you eat so poorly for so long, your body gets used to like feeling good and enjoying the food. And so there would be days that I just like, all I would crave would be like Taco Bell. Or all I'd crave is just like big dollops of peanut butter, and like trying to push that out of my mind and really like hunker down and stick to what I was doing was something that I really, really struggled with. Another thing was going on the diet. Like, it really impacted what my portions of food looked like. So at least for the first month or so, there were so many times where I was like going to bed hungry because my body just was not used to eating the correct amount of food every day.
Right.
The biggest thing is keeping yourself self-motivated. Like, I had an initial goal. Like, my wife and I, we had a trip to Disneyland planned last October. And I wanted to be 50 pounds down before I hit that Disneyland trip. That was like a big goal for me. That was a big goal I had set in my head. And we hit that Disneyland trip, and I hit that 50 pound goal. And like, hitting that big of a goal made it so hard to come back after the fact and stay motivated, because I had built that up in my head so much that it was almost like I had accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. Right.
Right.
So like, when you accomplish what you think you want to accomplish, how do you come back and then get back to the grind? Because you know, where you actually want to be isn't done. And that was something I really, really had to struggle with through like November and even through like the holidays and that kind of stuff. Cause you know, it's easy to get off for Thanksgiving and enjoy Thanksgiving. And then like, how do you get back on diet 2-3 days later after the Thanksgiving leftovers are gone? And it's the same thing for Christmas, but managed to pull it off, still grinding, still on diet today. Probably will stay on it the next handful of months until I said another 25 pounds or so, and then we'll call it a day.
Right. And I'm struggling myself. Like, my girlfriend and I were like, you know, let's make a goal this year. Like, let's get in shape. Cause mm-hmm. you know, we're not engaged, but like, we know we want to spend the rest of our lives together. Mm-hmm. And it's like, with that, we want to have children as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I really related to when you said that. It's like, you want to be healthy for when you bring someone else into this world. So I really relate to that. And it was great to hear your account on just the struggle of it, but also the satisfaction that comes with it. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, of course. And the, I mean, the satisfaction is the big point. Like, you reward yourself like mentally as you see the pounds drop off. So for me, like every 5 pounds was awesome. Every 10 pounds felt like a legitimate like jump for joy moment. And being able to like congratulate yourself and be proud of your accomplishments along the weight loss journey has really made me push to keep it going. Cause you're like, okay, well, if I go for another couple of weeks, that could be another 5 pounds, right? Like, right. And just that constant kind of rolling on top of each other really does make you want to stick to it and stick with the grind.
Yeah. Well, we're trying right now. You know, we hate dieting. So it's like we're trying to do our own type of dieting.
Yeah.
Where it's not as like involved, but more so just I read a book called Atomic Habits. And one of the big things that stuck out to me was surround yourself with the things that you know you should need. So like we're trying to keep candy away, even though we got a whole platter of candy behind me. We're trying to keep that out of reach, you know, have more like fruits and vegetables for snacks than just like potato chips and candy bars.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that I've been trying to do. But let's get away from that. I just wanted to touch base with you on that real quick. But let's talk about the gaming. Let's talk about how did you get into streaming? How did you become Bucko Nutsy?
Initially, so like back in the day, like I say back in the day very loosely, it was like 2016, 2017. I really got into like Fortnite, and that was like during the big Fortnite craze. And it was like mostly watching guys like Ninja or guys like Tim the Tatman or those kind of guys and looking at them and being like, I think I have that kind of personality. I think I can do that. And it was hard while I was in law school because like, if you don't know any better, streaming is a big time and money dump. Like getting the equipment necessary to make your stream kind of stand out and look unique and look good is not a cheap endeavor. So like when I graduated law school, I got some graduation gifts and I bought my first PC at that point. And then once I got my first PC, I started my job at my law firm and like I started having some more disposable income. So there was one day in like December that I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go for it. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to do it. And I think I can be successful at it. So I jumped on, I started streaming EA NHL initially. That was like my niche game. That was like what I jumped into. And then, you know, over the first month and a half, I would go from 2 or 3 viewers. And then I would go to like 4, 5, 6, 7. And one of the games I've loved for a super long time and one game that I play literally every year on its release is MLB The Show, right? And so, you know, by the time February rolled around, we were starting to get to that point where we were like 7, 8, 9 weeks out from MLB The Show. And I was like, okay, well, I'm going to switch over to MLB The Show full time when that game comes out and we'll see what happens. And initially, my streaming journey actually started with a pirate franchise. So MLB The Show 20 was the first MLB The Show that I ever streamed. And that was a tough era for the Pittsburgh Pirates. Like that was post Chris Archer trade. Like there is all sorts of bad things going on with that squad at that time. And like going through the process of rebuilding them and building them back into a championship, I did exactly what you said you were doing previously, which is like I would play like 3 games a night. It would span over the course of 3 series. I'd play like 1 game per series and I would just keep rolling. And that first year I went from 10 viewers to 30 or 40 viewers, which like in the grand scheme of Twitch is not very much, but it still felt really cool. And it felt like gratifying for me to be like, okay, I think I was right. I think I can do this. And then MLB The Show drops off around September, October, November. Football season kicks up, that kind of stuff. And it was like, you start getting that doubt again when you drop back down to 15 or 20 viewers. You're like, okay, well, was I right? Could I actually do this? I transitioned over to NCAA football for like December of January of 2021. And I actually ended up playing with Pitt for a little while and doing like a Pitt dynasty. And I saw the viewership start rolling in. And then really the one thing that completely changed it all for me and made me feel like oh, I've made it as a content creator is my TikTok started blowing up. Like right about the time the pandemic was rolling through, like TikTok was skyrocketing in popularity in America. I started making Madden videos initially. And then as MLB The Show dropped, and I kind of hit it at a perfect time because MLB The Show dropped on Xbox for the first time in 21. And so I knew that there was going to be a whole market of gamers out there that had never played the game, didn't know what they were getting into, right, didn't know how to start, didn't even know what to do when they first logged into the game. So leading up to the launch of MLB The Show 21, I started posting tips, tricks, news about MLB The Show, knowing that we were gaining a huge grouping of people coming in the game. And my TikTok went from 10,000 followers prior to MLB The Show 21's launch to 60,000 followers towards the middle of the year in MLB The Show. And I went from 30 viewers on Twitch or 40 viewers on Twitch, if I was lucky, to 300 viewers on launch day of MLB The Show. And it happened literally overnight. I had MLB The Show launches on a Thursday. I streamed on Wednesday to 40 people. I went live on Thursday and I had 300 people in my chat. Wow. And it like was just flipped a switch. And at that point I was like, okay, I know I can do this now. I know that this is something with my personality and how I interact with chat and like how I play the game. This is something I can definitely do. And it's been just kind of an upward trend since then. I view content creation much differently, I think, at this point than I did when I initially started content creating. When I initially wanted to start content creating, I viewed it like I needed to make it, right? Like I didn't know what that meant, but I figured I would know it when I felt it. And over the years, as I've created content, I've slowly come to realize, no, this is a way for me to blow off stream or blow off steam on stream. Like I work hard as a lawyer. I work long hours. I often have like a lot of stress on my plate at work. I get to come home and play a video game in front of hundreds of people and make some money off of it and get super cool opportunities like working with Sony or working with Teams or whatever it might be. And like, how lucky am I that I get to do this as a hobby and kind of blow off the steam from a long work day by playing a video game that I love. And so along with that transition from like really grinding to make it as a content creator to more of a side gig or more of a hobby, it's made me kind of refine my love of content creation, which is something that I was sorely missing in the middle of my content creation journey. I didn't want this ever to feel like a career, right? I already have a hard enough career. I don't want to have a second career on top of that. So there was a point where like it did start feeling like a second career and I realized I needed to take a step back and reevaluate what I wanted this to be. And I did that and came back and now it's one of my favorite things to do. So
yeah, that it's content creating is tough, you know, from, you know, whenever before I was even with North Shore 9, I was doing stuff with another website and it was like, cool, like it's cool to be part of a team here where we're all putting stuff together. And then you start to feel like, oh, I'm the only one putting the work in for the team. And then you're like, this feels like a job. So it's that point where you're like, you know, let's reevaluate. Like, we don't want this to be a job. Mm-hmm. We want this to be something that's fun. And like you said, blow off steam. Mm-hmm. Just do something as a hobby. And to the fact that you've been able to juggle that, especially with such a demanding job and being a lawyer, like that's crazy.
Yeah.
I would have never, like when I found out you were a lawyer, I was like, what? This guy's a lawyer and he's streaming? Like what goes into that?
That's how everyone kind of feels whenever they hear about me. I will say that one of the things that I'm super, super blessed with, and it's just something that I don't think a lot of lawyers get the benefit of, especially earlier in their career. I work with a firm that is super, super focused on like work-life balance and making sure you get to enjoy your life outside of just your job. It's a really family-focused firm. Everyone has their own families. Yes. Everyone has their own stuff going on. So what that means is generally my job is an 8-to-5. Now I am grinding when I am there 8-to-5. I am getting my work done. I'm making sure I'm hitting all my deadlines and everything like that. But because of that, my job does not expect me to be on call during the evenings or on the weekends, unless we have like a big deadline or trial prep or something coming on that I really like, okay, well, my job has to be my priority right now. So what that has really allowed me to do is my time away from my job is my time away from my job, and how I juggle that and what I choose to do with that time really is up to me. When I first started content creating, my wife and I had just started dating. Like we lived in different towns, so we could only really see each other on the weekends. So all the time during the week was my time. Like I would come home from work, I would go live at 5:30 or 6, I'd stay live until 10 p.m. and that was my Monday to Friday. That's what it looked like. As my life has evolved, so too is where the streaming has to fall on my priority list. But I still, you know, I still do make an active attempt to go live 3-4 times a week for, you know, 3-4 hours at a time if possible. And it's all about just kind of like juggling, making sure my wife knows that she's appreciated. Luckily, she is incredibly supportive with what I do, both TikTok and Twitch, that I cannot thank her enough. And obviously, like I said, we're expecting. So that's going to have to change my priorities even further in a couple of months.
But right. I was going to ask, like, yeah. Has that been a discussion yet? Of like,
it hasn't. not yet, but it's not going to have to be a discussion, right? Like, there's not going to be a point where I feel like I'm choosing my stream over my child. That's just not going to be something we run into. Now, if it's 7:30 at night and we put her down for the night, or it's time for her to go to sleep, or I know she's napping, or my wife will obviously take her because she knows that this is important to me. This is an important hobby. It's what I do to enjoy myself. I will find times to still stream. I just will have to be a lot more judicious and pay more attention to what that looks like and how my time setup really is. But I mean, I will say streaming combined with like my personal life and combined with my career has taught me is like serious, serious time management skills. Like that's, I got to dedicate my 8 to 5. So I don't have to take my work home with me. That way I have free time to do my hobby on the side and make sure my wife feels loved and appreciated and make sure I can take care of things around the house and like do all of that kind of stuff.
Right. It really is a blessing to find a partner that helps you out in that way and is very supportive. And Steph's over here in the corner listening to me, the one side of the interview that she can hear. But
I was gonna say you need to give her big kudos because she just had to go watch you sit in Florida for
a little time. And hey, listen, there's a huge discussion about, you know, I was trying to push for us to go this week because she's on spring break. She's a teacher.
Yeah,
she's a teacher, so she's
my on wife spring too, break. Actually, so
I was trying to push the guys. I was like, hey, let's go the next week because then we can have another person help pay for the condo.
Yeah,
cheaper for us. But no, Tyler's got to, you know, he's a coach. He's a high school baseball coach. He's got to be there for his guys.
Yeah.
I was upset.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Steph was upset.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Not as much as me, but.
So this is like a kind of a unique thing, and this is going to be a really niche, quick conversation between you and I that I feel like most of the people watching this aren't going to understand.
Okay.
It's hard being together with a teacher. Like, teaching is a uniquely difficult profession. Like my wife has her contracted hours from 8 to 4 or whatever. My wife is never only working until 4. There's so much time that they're putting in after hours and like so much time and effort that they're devoting to these kids that I don't feel like they're getting the proper like support for or the proper praise for. But like, you know, I have a demanding job. My wife is a teacher's job is significantly more demanding than mine.
Absolutely. Is. And it's like she's a college professor, adjunct professor, and she has to like be on campus from like 10 a.m. until 10 p.m. because she's also doing like office hours and she's doing writing center hours, helping students that she doesn't even see on a day to day.
Yeah.
She's helping other students with their papers. She's doing all that. Meanwhile, she has to come home and grade papers and then make the lesson plan. And then it's demanding and it's crazy to watch. And on top of that, she's a very talented writer. So she's crying in the corner because we're complimenting her right now. But she's also a writer, and then she makes time. She recently had a poetry reading in New York City that she was able to make time for. And it's like, how?
Yeah, I don't understand it either. My wife puts so many hours. There's so many days where she leaves the house at 7:15 and I don't see her until 7-8 o'clock. Right. And then somehow she still manages to be a part of our local soccer board and our local ski club with the schools and that kind of stuff. And I'm like, bro, you are running yourself ragged. You are running yourself so thin. I don't know how you're doing this.
They're superheroes, man. That's all I can say. It's awesome. But all right. Anything else we want to discuss before we get into it? I got a little game for us.
Okay. No, I think that I've touched everything I wanted.
All right. So you're a huge MLB The Show guy. Now, did you know that before it was The Show, it was just MLB?
Yes.
All right. We're going to see how familiar you are with that, because we're going to do every MLB cover athlete before The Show, a visual quiz. Okay. All right. So I got to make sure I'm able to. Okay, here we go. So this is from 1997, or I guess they started with 98, but it came out in 97. I don't know how that works. But then it goes to 2006, which I found out there were two games that came out in 2006. The non-The Show one and then The Show, which had David Ortiz on the cover.
I did not realize that.
Neither did I until I looked it up. I was like, that's kind of weird. They had two games. But
that's crazy.
Let's get started
with
the quiz. First up, we got MLB 98. Can you tell me who's on MLB 98?
Chipper Jones?
No. It's Bernie Williams. It's
Bernie?
Yeah. I was like, what?
I had Bernie? No idea. I had no idea it was Bernie on there.
All right. Let's go on to 99. Who was on MLB 99?
Is this Bonds?
No, this is Cal Ripken Jr.
There was a year. So here's the thing, and here's where I'm getting mixed up here. I thought that there was a game, and I for some reason I thought it was MLB that Bonds was on the cover of in 99, and it's the only game since that he gave his rights to, and it's the last time he was officially in a MLB video game, and now I'm gonna have to go check this out after the fact. You are about to stump me on all of these, and then I could name literally every MLB The Show cover athlete since it actually turned into MLB The Show. That's
right. All right, let's move on to 2000. Who is on the cover of MLB 2000?
Luis Gonzalez?
No, it's Mo Vaughn.
Mo Vaughn. That's nuts.
Like, some of these are the most random.
That is MLB so players. Random.
I'm like, Mo Vaughn, really? He couldn't get like Jeter or somebody?
I know, that's crazy.
All right, let's move on. 2001. Who was on the cover of MLB 2001?
Man, I feel like Lugo was somewhere in here. I'm locking in Luis Gonzalez again.
This one was Chipper.
Oh, Jones. It's Chipper! Oh my god. You've got to be kidding.
Oh, we got
me.
You with the Chipper.
I knew he's in there. So here's the thing. Part of the way I'm going about this is in MLB The Show 23, there's captain cards, right? There's captain cards in Diamond Dynasty that boost your team. And one of the captains is a cover athlete captain. It's David Wright, and he boosts all the former cover athletes on MLB The Show. And there's a little Easter egg in that it boosts all of the cover athletes that were the covers before MLB The Show was called MLB The Show. And part of the things that I'm going through right now is I know Chipper Jones was on that squad, and I know Luis Gonzalez is on that squad too. I just don't know where he falls in this whole grouping.
All right, let's move on to 2002. Who's on 2002?
Barry Zito.
It's Andrew Jones.
Oh, it's Andrew. They went back-to-back Braves?
Back-to-back Braves. I was shocked.
I miss Andrew Jones in MLB The Show. He was so good, and he has such a good swing, and now he's gone, and I'm sad.
Yes. All right. 2003, who do we got? I'm going to laugh so hard.
Is this Luis Gonzalez?
No.
Oh, Miguel Tejada?
Barry Bonds.
Oh, my God. I thought it was 99. Oh, my God. No, I also have to point out, like, just so people, like, get a sense of myself, I was 9 in 2003. This is incredibly difficult. I was more of a Madden kid in 2003.
I was 6. Like, it was even
damn
worse.
I knew Bonds was in there at some point. That's so ruthless.
I didn't. So, like, when I was doing this research, I didn't start recognizing covers until 2005.
Yeah.
That was for me, like, being 3 years younger than you. Like,
yeah, that's tough.
So let's go 2004. Who we got? Now we're on to PlayStation 2 as well.
PlayStation 2, MLB 04. I mean, shit, like, I'm going to keep going Luis Gonzalez because I know
you're just going to keep going.
I think.
Are you sure?
No, I'm not. Is this Pujols? I don't actually know.
Sean Green.
Oh, it's Sean Green. Ugh.
I think you're getting your MVP baseball cover athletes mixed up with your MLB cover athletes.
It's tough. That era is super, super tough.
Yeah, because, yeah, there were so many MLB games. Like, I remember, I think Curt Schilling was on the cover of, like, Fever Pitch or something. Yeah.
Dude, All-Star Baseball, that was where Jeter always was. Jeter was on the cover of All-Star Baseball for a handful of years in a row. And, like, I was a big All-Star Baseball guy in this era. And then I switched over to MLB The Show in 06 with Big Poppy on the cover. And like I said, if we went from 6 on, I could answer every single one. But this is not in my wheelhouse here.
All right. Well, we got two more. We got MLB 2005. This is the first one I recognized, but I did not know the player.
So that looks – I'm trying to think of – Biggio?
Is that your final answer?
It is.
Eric Chavez.
Eric Chavez. Whoa. That's actually nuts.
Yeah.
So right. I'm just gonna get the guess in here because I'm pretty sure I'm right about this one, but I very much could not be right about this one. Is it Vlad Sr.?
Final answer?
I think so.
If it would go. Did I forget to add the last slide? I did forget to add the last slide. But you're correct. It's Vlad Sr.
Hey, 1 for 10. We take those. Grade me on a curve.
Oh, I know what happened. I edited the picture first, and then I duplicated it, and then I never re-put the image up. I never fixed the image. But it's Vlad Sr.
Yeah, that's I'm here for that. I finally got one right. But then you can, like, rapid fire, like, 06 is Ortiz, 07 is Ryan Howard, 08 is David Wright, 09 is Pedroia, 10 and 11 are Mauer, 12 is Adrian Gonzalez, 13 is our guy Kutch, 14 is Miggy Cabrera, 15 is Yasiel Puig, 16 is Josh Donaldson, 17 is Griffey, 18 is Judge, 19 is Harper, 20 is Javi Baez, 21 is Fernando Tatis, 22 is Jackie Robinson, 21 is Tatis and Jackie Robinson, 22 is Shohei, and then obviously 23 and 24 were here now. So I can ramble those off immediately, but man,
I knew that was going to be too easy. I had to make it a little tough on you.
That's ruthless. I'm legitimately butthurt that I knew Bonds was in that grouping of players and could not pinpoint to where he fell in that timeline.
Oh man, I didn't even realize, because, like, you always hear the stories of, like, oh, he never was in the game. And then you're like, oh, he was on the cover of 2003.
Yep. And that was the last game he was ever in. He also had previously appeared in Ken Griffey's baseball on N64. You can play with Bonds in that game. But yeah, Bonds notoriously difficult about his rights. And God, I hope we get him in MLB The Show, because, I mean, I need him for the Pirates theme team so bad. But
Absolutely.
He would bust that game. Like,
was he in Slugfest?
He might have been in Slugfest, but it would have had to have been one of the early Slugfests.
Okay.
Because right about 03 was where, you know, all the allegations started coming out, and all of a sudden he didn't enjoy the media so much anymore. And that really changed his relationship with video games too, unfortunately.
So yeah, what was your first MLB video game that you played? I know you mentioned EA and...
Yeah. All-Star Baseball 2001 is the first one that I can vividly remember playing. And I remember going to a Ross and it being in the toy section of Ross, and I picked it up and I played All-Star Baseball 2001, which should have been Derek Jeter on the cover, if I am thinking of this right.
I should look it up. 2001 MLB All-Star is what it's called.
No, it's called All-Star Baseball 2001. All-Star and it was Derek Jeter on the cover of it. And I played All-Star Baseball for 02 and 03. And then I switched over to EA MVP Baseball for 05, 05, or 04, 05, and 06 and 07, which some of the most underrated baseball games of all time, because those are the college baseball games. And the sound of the metal bat is just chef's kiss. for a sports video game. And then I switched over to MLB The Show when the PS2 and PS3 were really rolling. I was an Xbox 360 kid, though. So I was an MLB 2K player up until the point that I switched back to PS4 and 13 and 14. And then I could get back into MLB The Show.
I was always a PlayStation kid up until high school. Like, I think it was my junior year of high school. I switched over to the Xbox One. And luckily, quickly after that, they were like, hey, we're putting the show on Xbox. I was like, thank God, I haven't played it in like 3 years.
What a rough console generation to make the jump over to Xbox.
I know.
The one versus the PS4 is tough. I will say, like, the only reason I jumped ship to Xbox was because everyone around me was buying Xbox 360s. So, like, if I wanted to play video games with my friends, I wasn't going to do it on PS3. So I basically had to jump ship.
Right, and that's why I jumped to the Xbox One, because my friends, they were having like LAN parties, and I was like, oh, I want to go to the LAN party, so I bought an Xbox. Meanwhile, they bought the Xbox with their own money, and then their parents or their grandparents bought them the PS4, and I'm like, I could only afford one.
I'm stuck on the Xbox One.
Yeah, I could only get the Xbox One. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, sorry, man. It's just going to have to lock in here.
But I was looking up the first baseball game I played was Sammy Sosa High Heat 2001 on PlayStation 1.
Throwback. I can't even say that I know that game. Like, I know a lot, like, obviously the big.
And that was actually the other game that I was talking about, the Fever Pitch or whatever. It was actually High Heat with Curt Schilling on.
Okay. That makes sense.
So that was the franchise I grew up with until MLB The Show came out.
Sidebar, my first time ever in PNC was in 2004, I believe, and it was for a Cubs-Pirates game while Sammy Sosa was a member of the Cubs, and that is a highlight moment for me as far as my sports journey goes.
So wait, what year was this?
Oh, it should have been 04.
Was it the series where he hit the longest home run in PNC Park history?
It might be, but I was a youngin'. I was like 10 years old at that point, so I don't know.
No, so was I, but I think I was at that game.
That's
where he hit it. Because I just remember sitting at the game and someone hit a massive home run that looked like it went over the batter's eye. And I was in awe. I was 7 years old, just in awe.
Yeah.
I was like, what did I just witness?
I was super excited to see him in MLB The Show this year. Like, there's a lot of guys that, even as Pirate fans, you're like, man, I watched him kill us for so many years. And Sammy Sosa's on that list. Albert Pujols. Oh, my God. I am so happy that Albert Pujols retired. If you go back and review my tweets from that last year of Albert Pujols' career, I guaranteed that Albert Pujols was going to hit the last 15 home runs of his career against the Pirates. Like, he was not going to hit anyone else. But sure shit, every time he played the Pirates, it was going to be a home run, and it was going to get him closer to 700.
Right. And that was rough about, you know, growing up a Pirates fan is, you know, you would go to a Pirates game, but you're like, oh, Albert Pujols is on the other team. I'm a fan of him. Sammy Sosa's on the other team. I'm a fan of him. But it's like, you're sitting there with a Pirates hat on.
And, yeah, you know, I mean,
you can't.
Like I told you, when I first started getting into to video games and when I can really remember getting into like deep into video games, Jason Bay was my dude. I love Jason Bay. I have, you can't see it because it's all blurry, but there's a Jason Bay signed jersey right off frame here, along with a Jack Wilson bat. But Jason Bay was my, absolutely my guy. And he was the first player that I remember the Pirates breaking my heart with. Like,
yep.
He was the first one that I was like, oh, I can't unfortunately trust this team to protect any of my favorite players. This is just what I'm going to set myself up for forever. And watching it play out again and again and again, it really does hurt. So it's nice. My like segue there is, it's nice watching them extend Hayes, and it's nice watching them extend Keller, and watching them extend Brian Reynolds, and feeling like maybe that cycle of just letting every good player that we've ever had walk, at least after the first contract, might be coming to an end.
Right. And then it's like, you see other teams, like I always bring up the Braves. They lock down their young talent. Like Acuna is locked down, and he got locked down early. Same with Michael Harris II. Like, after he won Rookie of the Year, they're like, here's a 7-year contract. Just take it. It's like, that's when you're a small market team, you hope that that's what your team does.
Yeah. And I mean,
get these guys young and cheap.
The Royals just did it with Bobby Witt. But I do understand why a team would shy away from that. Because for every player that comes up and has an incredible rookie season, you then watch them crash and burn immediately after that, and your front office is like, okay, well, can I afford to take that risk on an 8-year contract? A good example of that to a smaller scale is Gregory Polanco, right? Like we all expected Polanco to be the next thing, and then injuries and lack of confidence and things kind of just like spiral out of control,
just playing right field like he's a baby giraffe.
Exactly. And obviously to a much more different extent, Wander Franco, you're like, pay him just a ridiculous amount of money, and then you find out that he is just a garbage can human being.
Terrible person.
And here we are, and now that gives the Pirates the excuse to not go out and take the Braves model, even though the Braves have shown like, hey, this is going to work. Like, we have every single one of our players locked up for like an 8-year contract for $100 million, and they're not going anywhere.
Right. It's like, hey, give Tamar 10 years for $100 million right now.
Yeah. Just lock him in, and I'm here for it. Or even, I mean, the Brewers just did it with Jackson Chirios, right? Like,
yeah.
Just threw a Brinks truck at him before he's even hit the majors. And you're like, okay, well, this could go terribly. But man, if it hits, you're cooking for however long.
So before we get out of here, funny story about Jackson Chirio. So myself, Jim, and DiNardo went to the winter meetings this past December. And we're sitting in this, like, it's all like, it's a giant hotel. It makes you feel like you're outside, you're not outside. And there's just a bunch of, like, they're supposed to be nice restaurants, but they're all kind of crappy. And we're sitting in this like Mexican restaurant, just eating nachos, chilling. All of a sudden, Jackson Chirio, like, he's walking around with his hat on, just walks in. And we're like, Jackson Chirio, sick. We're like eating next to Jackson Chirio. They sit down, him and his agent, like all the people, his posse, they sit down at a table for like a minute, not even, like less than 30 seconds. And then they get up. They all got waters and stuff, but they get up and just leave. And we're like, what just happened? Like, why are you coming into this like dingy little forgotten restaurant in this hotel and just like showing face? Like, nobody cares. Like, why did you just do that? It was such a weird thing to witness. That's
such a weird thing. I will tell a story real quick. One thing that someone, like if someone has followed me or knows my history, I have a legitimate personal hatred towards Garrett Cole. Like, just I despise Garrett Cole. Okay. And the reason that this is the case is because in 2016, I went to a Mariners Pirates series in Seattle. And like, I was super hyped. It was my first time seeing the Pirates in a handful of years. They don't get into Seattle, especially at that time. They were only going like every 4 to 8 years over to Seattle. And I was super jacked to see them. So I took a ball to get signed, right? That team, I got it signed by David Fries. I got it signed by Starling Marte. I got it signed by like the later years of Kutch. I got it signed by Clint Hurdle. I was so hyped about having this ball. After the game, and it was after the game was over, Garrett Cole was just standing in the dugout. And I was on the backside of the dugout, and it was before the nets would go all the way. So you could pretty easily interact with players right there at the dugout. I was like, hey, Garrett, will you sign my ball? And he looked up at me and like, made eye contact with me and motioned at me to like throw him the ball. And so I threw him the ball and it hit him dead ass in the chest. And he watched it hit the ground and he walked away. And I lost this signed baseball with like all sorts of Pirate icons at the time. And I have never forgiven Garrett Cole for that moment. So I a lot of people have heard this Garrett Cole story. I hate Garrett Cole for him taking a signed baseball away from me. And then it was gone. Like it hit the ground in the dugout, and the people who were working the stadium wouldn't go into the dugout, or they couldn't go into the dugout to get it. And it was just lost to the ages. So maybe in the Pirates ball barrel, there was a ball that was signed by a handful of Pirates that ended up somewhere. But if you ever see that or ever come across it, just know Garrett Cole took that ball from me and I will never get it again.
I mean, I have my reasons why I don't like Garrett Cole anymore, but that trumps it. That's crazy. Yep.
So that's probably my most infamous story regarding the Pirates. I have mostly good interactions. I've had a really good time being a Pirate fan. I've had a really good time interacting with the community. I will say, silver lining, the next day I went to the Mariners Pirates game, and Starling Marte gave me his batting gloves. So full circle. It worked out well in the end. I got my instant karma the next day, but yeah, that's my worst moment as a Pirate fan.
Wow. Well, Nutsy, thanks for sharing that. And I'm sure people in the Pirates community will get behind you in hating Garrett Cole, because the dude has just turned into a sore loser since he left Pittsburgh.
Yeah. I was surprised that he had such glowing things to say about our fan base in that article.
Yeah,
that we got.
I was kind of shocked too,
because he has not been very kind to the Pirates or anyone since he left. So, very shocking. Nope. Maybe he's softening with age.
Maybe he's less of a. I'll just say, maybe he's less of a pussy now.
Damn! Woo! Going in.
Hey, whenever the whole thing with the spider attack came out and he was bitching about it, I was like, "Go cry me a river, dude."
Yeah, it's the reason you have a $300 million contract. Although, I will say, as much as I shit on Garrett Cole, his last season with the Yankees did prove that he is not just a spider tack merchant. He looked very, very good, and good for Garrett Cole and good for Yankee fans, but I will still not enough to get my disdain away.
Right. I pray that he does not perform well, because a lot of my friends are Yankees fans, and I want them to feel what I felt. Yeah.
I'll never forget Schwarber just tanking a ball that's still probably in orbit.
Yep. Well, anyway, we got a little sad there at the end, but Nutsy, thank you for bucking around with me tonight. I really appreciate it, my man.
Appreciate you having me, and go Bucks.
Let's go Bucks.